friends, Christy Tagey here, your host for the Productive Passions podcast. Let me ask you, is there something different you dream of doing but don't know where to begin? If you're feeling suffocated, anxious, or you feel there's something different calling you, come along with me for candid conversations with people who have embarked on a journey to put their passions to work for them. Buckle up and enjoy the ride. Life is too short to stay stuck. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Mary Miller, a retired nurse from the U.S. Navy who has seamlessly transitioned into the dynamic field of employment law. At first glance, nursing and law seem worlds apart, but Mary's story bridges these seemingly distant shores. After years of dedicated service in the Navy as a nurse, Mary found herself at a crossroads. Despite the respect and stability nursing offered, she sensed a deeper yearning within herself, a calling beyond the confines of her scrubs. While many of her peers were climbing the rungs of their respective career ladders, Mary bravely confronted her truth. Nursing, while noble, wasn't her true passion. And so with unwavering resolve, she embarked on the long journey of becoming an attorney. Mary's journey is a testament to the idea that career paths are not always linear. While nursing and employment law may seem worlds apart, Mary has navigated both with grace and determination. Her story challenges the notion that once you've chosen a career, you're locked into it for life. Mary, thank you for joining me today on Productive Passions. It's so good to see you again.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Christy. I've really been looking forward to this. So thank you for inviting me to do this. This is just really, really cool. I've been listening to your podcast, and I think that this is just a really great thing.
How about telling us, what is it that you do now? What's your current job?
My current job is I work for a company that provides, I'm an attorney by trade.
I know.
And it's okay if you don't like that. Nobody likes attorneys until they need one. So, but that was after an initial career. But so currently I work for a company that provides employment law services to companies all over the country and all over the world. So I am licensed to practice law in California. So I work with their members who have California employees. And help them navigate the very convoluted California employment law environment.
Tell us a little bit about where you started, because your life was very, very different.
I started out in the Navy as a Navy nurse.
Thank you for your service.
Oh, my pleasure. And my goal with the Navy, I grew up as a military brat, so the military lifestyle was all I knew. And it's kind of funny, when I decided to go into the military, it was a patriotic moment, but the underlying reason was I was petrified at not having a military ID card, at the thought of when I turned 18, I could no longer get on base. I could no longer use the services that I grew up using. And so it was like, well, how do I fix that? And one of the options
was,
that's
where you probably did your grocery shopping and other kinds of shopping.
You went to the gym, went to the swimming pool, did all of the activities that I knew that I grew up with. Now, I wasn't really considering the fact that once I became an adult, I probably really wouldn't use the childhood services that I did before, but it was weird. I thought, I'm going to have to give this little card up, and this little card provides me with these really unique privileges.
Right.
And then the other reason, and again, there was the patriotic component, because my father was very, very much into that part of it, but it was an opportunity for me when I finished nursing school to get out of Maryland. I knew I wanted to not live in Maryland for the rest of my life. I needed to see someplace else. I needed to be someplace else. Didn't know where, didn't care where, but the Navy provided me that opportunity. So when I finished college, I got commissioned in the Navy, and that's where it all started.
So how long did you stay in the Navy?
Well, I was on duty for almost 10 years, but then I stayed in the reserves, which was the best part of that whole deal. because I could do it. I did it on my terms. Staying in the reserves means 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks out of the year you do training. But it offered me, number one, the pay and the promotion opportunities and everything else, but also the retirement. I could still retire and get all of those retirement benefits, but only doing it part-time. And I got to tell you, the for anybody that's been in the military, there are certain opportunities you have, particularly as a nurse, that can be somewhat limited, or they were back in my day. Women couldn't go on ships at that time. So we were basically in a hospital, or you could be attached to a Marine medical battalion. So you were in the field with the Marines. I didn't get that opportunity till I was in the reserves, and it was the best 8.5 years of my, or 10.5 years of my entire Navy career was being with the Marines.
So what, when you were with the Marines, how was that different than when you went in and you were in the hospital?
So in the hospital, it's like being a nurse in any hospital. You're assigned to a unit, pediatrics, ICU, whatever it is. But when you're with the Marines, you are their medical thing. All of their medicine, when they go out into the field and they do forward units of during combat, you train for all of that stuff. So we had mobile hospital units, living in tents, wow, hiking, all the cool stuff that I really like doing, and getting down and dirty and all that stuff and living on the ground. But I loved that. And so that was great. But while I did that, I had an opportunity to do a bunch of medical missions, for the, it was the Navy and the Marine Corps combined. And so I went to, I've been to most of the countries in South America, Alaska, Southern Texas, Albania, wow, Haiti, doing, medical missions for local populations, that don't have access to routine medical care. And those were great. And my job with my unit was to organize those events. So I'd make sure that we got the appropriate people over there, appropriate number of doctors, nurses, specialists, all the supplies that we were going to need for a 1 month, medical mission. That was my job, was to coordinate all of that. It was great. It was a great job.
So it was a little bit like glamping.
It can be some hardcore camping, and sometimes even worse than that, because when we were in really remote places, now in Haiti, they had, this was before the events that have been happening in the last 10 years or so, because this was in the 90s, they had built us a nice little kind of little tent village with air conditioning and all that stuff. So that was really nice. When we were in remote areas of Alaska, we stayed in their little medical buildings, which were usually just little small buildings that they did for medical care. And then sometimes we were just in these horrible tents. So it wasn't where you'd had to go to some other tent to take a shower and another tent to eat your meals. So I guess glamping, if you're into that sort of thing.
Well, you know what, as you're talking about that, the image of MASH.
Yes, that's exactly, yes, that's exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
So you had the shower tent?
Yes.
Wow.
Although it wasn't, because MASH was way more permanent. Even though it was considered mobile, it was way more permanent and very large. Ours was like 5 of those tents that you saw on the MASH set. One was for food, the other was for housing. And sometimes, depending on how long you were going to be there, they'd set up some kind of little gym for you, and then a place to shower. And that was pretty much it.
So how many people were in the housing tent?
It depended. Like when we were, like in Haiti, there were several different ones, and they housed people by rank. And that's the hierarchy of the military, is how it works. And so we'd have anywhere from 5 to 15 people in one living space. It was rare that you got a space that was smaller than 5 or 6 people.
So almost you just kinda, like living in a college dorm?
Actually, worse than my college dorm anyway. My college dorm, I had, you know, a roommate, and then we shared a bathroom with 2 other people. And that was pretty nice compared to this.
Wow.
But it's something that not everybody is built to do it. not everybody enjoys it. In fact, most people hate it. but I liked it. I liked it. It was different. It was fun.
Yeah. And you've seen a lot of places that most of us will never see. And yeah, certainly not the way you saw it. Even if we do go to those right places, it won't be in that same way.
Right. Like for example, the biggest one, well, Haiti is one where we flew into Port-au-Prince, had a little hospital setting there, but then every day we would take a bus for an hour, hour and a half into the hills, to these really remote communities. We did the same thing in Bolivia. I actually had to get helicoptered to one of them as the advance team. So it was like, we're way in the middle of the Amazon. We built this clinic or set up this clinic for people, and people that were coming for care were walking for 2 days. Then when they knew we were coming, because they it's so seldom that they get to see any type of healthcare provider, let alone a doctor or a nurse practitioner or a dentist or an eye doctor or anything like that.
So, I was going to ask you how you were received. They must have been very grateful to see you.
Very grateful. Because the first one that I did was to Haiti, and it's such a poor country. And I came back emotionally kind of traumatized by it, because they live from minute to minute, not knowing when their next meal is going to be or anything. But when they heard we were coming, and they get word ahead of time that we were going to be in certain different villages, they put on their Sunday best. The women and the little girls were all in dresses to come and see us. The boys would put on their little ties, like they had one nice outfit, and that's what they would wear to see us. It was such a special occasion for them.
I bet pretty humbling for you too, huh?
Very, very. It just went, and I think that's what got to me the most, was how much we take advantage of everything we have access to here. Yeah. And we still complain about it because, you know, it's not to our liking, whatever that may be. And they just are grateful to see a doctor so that they can get their child medicine to get rid of the parasite that's been living in their gut for, 2 years. It can be really emotionally heavy.
I bet. So how did they get the word out that you guys were coming?
You know, I don't know exactly how that happened. I know that there was a lot of pre-planning with the local government or non-governmental organizations on the ground. So they have these NGO operations in every country, and they would be the ones, they knew, they worked closely with our group, and they would go and they'd actually just write out to these villages and say, on this day, 1 week from Sunday, 7 days from next Sunday, or this Sunday, or 7 days from tomorrow, they will be here. And if you want to see them, come here. And then they would show up, and many of them, like I said, walking for a day and a half just to get there. Fast forward to, 1999, when I decided to go to law school. Because at the time that I first started doing this with the Marines, I was still working as a nurse. 1999, I decided to go to law school, and I went to New York, and I went to a really progressive school, and where there was a real anti-military element at this school.
At the school.
And so at the school, among the students, well, and probably some of the professors as well. And so I let very few people know that I was affiliated with the military at all. And so I would hear people talk about why the military is terrible. And, the only reason, I literally had this one fellow student tell me, the only reason people join the military is so they can go to foreign countries and kill people. And I said, boy, have you lived a weird, sheltered life, because that is not at all what the military does. And so I shared with him what I had done in Haiti, and that I think a year before I started law school was when I went down to McAllen, Texas, which is another it's actually in our own country we provided these services, and in Alaska, where they have these small towns are so remote and they're basically medical deserts. And I told him about that, and he thought I was making it up. I mean, he just had no,
really?
Yeah. And I thought, there's something wrong with that. If we're not taking credit for the really good things that we're doing and the humanitarian things that we're doing, then that's a problem that people need to understand. And he was kind of an isolated, weird incident, but even today, I don't think the military gets enough credit for what they do when they go to countries and just build infrastructure, you know, give them running water and dig wells and build schools. And that happens a lot more than anybody knows. It's funny because I never did well at individual sports. I only did well at team sports. I played softball, I played basketball, played a little bit of soccer, and I played field hockey. But whenever I was not a runner, I couldn't do any of the individual sports. And I can't even think of any others because I don't know any. Because I need the other people around me. I need to be able to, I feed off of them and I help them excel as well. And that's what I need to get that satisfaction.
What did you want to be when you were 10 years old?
Well, I could actually go back to when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
Because it was the same thing. And that was to be a nurse. And
wow.
It started out as we had a neighbor that was a nurse. And I spent a lot of time kind of hanging out with her because I was one of seven and didn't get a lot of one-on-one time with my own mom. So I went next door and got one-on-one time with our neighbor. And so I said out loud when I was four that I wanted to grow up and be a nurse, just like Mrs. Baker. And that followed me. It followed me through grade school. It followed me through high school, junior high school, where it was not, you know, if you still want to go to nursing school, it's when you go to nursing school, this is what you're going to need to do. So everything that I took in high school, all the elective courses I took were centered around math and science, because that's what I was going to need to get into nursing school. Interestingly enough, in my junior year of nursing school, I actually verbalized to my carpool friends that I'm not sure if I really want to do this.
Become a nurse. So why? Yes, what was the change? What was it you thought you didn't want to do?
I didn't know if I had the passion to do it, but they were just seemed very passionate about it. Like this was, you know, they were all in. And I actually had in my senior year of nursing school, my coordinator or my counselor, I guess, she said to me, she goes, "Nursing isn't your passion, is it?" And I was 20 years old and I said, "Should it be?" Oh no, she said, "Nursing isn't your life, is it?" And I said, "Should it be?" I mean, at 20 years old, I'm thinking there's so many other things to do. why does nursing have to be my life? But that was kind of the expectation. And I said, "Well, no, it's not, but I don't know that that makes me, you know, a bad nursing student or, you know, a prospective nurse." So I did not want to disappoint my dad. So I finished school. And that's where the whole Navy thing kind of came into play, because I knew that I needed some other environment in order to kind of give this thing a go. And so nursing was not my passion. And I think I knew that early on, but I was good at nursing because it was what I knew. And I knew how to do it. I liked it to the point of, because I got to interact with people, all kinds of people in all types of environments and in all states of health. And I really liked that.
But you know, but it's so interesting. You talk about, you love people, you love being around people, mm-hmm. you feed off people. So while maybe nursing wasn't ultimately your passion, you were following your passion, even in that nursing, by mm-hmm. being in an environment that sounds like it was very stimulating for you.
Well, it was, and it opened up a lot of opportunities for me that I didn't even know were going to be opportunities at the time that, particularly when I joined the Navy. So once I got into the Navy and I kind of figured out this whole Navy nurse thing, I thought, you know, this is going to allow for me so many opportunities to do other things. And the first thing that I took advantage of was the sports programs. So I played all Navy softball, which means I get to travel around with this elite team of Navy softball players and play in tournaments.
Oh my gosh, how fun.
and the way I looked at it at the time, now we're talking 1985, 86, is there's no other place on the planet where you can actually get paid to play softball. as a woman, because pro sports weren't there. Even college scholarships weren't available when I was in college. And so I got paid to play in these tournaments with some amazing ball players. And that was great.
There's always a place where I sort of want to rewind and play it again. Mm-hmm. And I think what's important about what you just said was you didn't realize the opportunities. So I think a lot of times when young people are looking at what they want to be when they grow mm-hmm. up and they start going to mm-hmm. college, and there's this moment of, is this really what I want to do? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be the end of the world, because mm-hmm. what you don't know at the time is what is yet to come, what it's going mm-hmm. to lead you to do. Like you're talking about all of these things that you've done because you started out as a nurse and then mm-hmm. certainly went on to doing other things. But I found that in my own life too. I went on mm-hmm. to college to be an occupational therapist. And it opened so many other doors for me that I didn't know about. I didn't even know that I mm-hmm. cared about. Mm-hmm. But I was in a field that a job, a career that gave me what I felt like would fulfill me. Sort of what you're mm-hmm. saying is taking care of other people, helping other people. So it's interesting and something to keep in mind when you're starting out is you don't know where it's going to lead you. Mm-hmm. There are so many things. If you're open to them and mm-hmm. you're a bit unafraid of not knowing everything, of being uncertain, right. of being willing to learn.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, I always feel like I don't want to be that old person that tries to offer unsolicited advice to young people. But one thing that I told this, particularly my own family, nieces and close friends, kids who are thinking about going to nursing school, but aren't really sure if that's what they want. And what I usually say to them is say, look, if you don't have something else that's drawing you to that, and you're thinking nursing might be it, I said, just do it. Because once you go to nursing school, you number one have learned how to study a very difficult subject. You've learned critical life lessons just in caring for other people. And it opens 1,000 doors to a million other things that you can do with it. You can be a nurse and when you are a nurse and it just, people look at that and they go, wow, that's really great. And they want, yes. they want that it, and I don't know if it's nursing school, if it's just what you learn in nursing school or how you learn it. But there's something about being a nurse and whatever else it is that nursing leads you to, is really a great, it's a great path to follow. I had no, like I said, I had no idea the doors that would open up for me when I went to nursing school. I didn't even know that they were there when I graduated from nursing school and joined the Navy, but it was every opportunity that I had and every opportunity that I took when I was in the Navy going forward led me to where I am today. Because without that, I would not be here.
So you're not stuck. Right. With whatever the degree is that you have whatever the certificate or certification that you have.
Right.
A lot of times I find that employers want to know that you can get a certificate. You can mm-hmm. do the work, the follow through that's necessary to earn a degree, a certificate to get certified or licensed, because mm-hmm. that shows a willingness to learn, a willingness to do what it takes to get to the next level, but it also shows yourself that you are capable. Hey, you went and you learned mm-hmm. this thing you didn't ever know before. How did you go from being a nurse, playing softball mm-hmm. in the Navy, traveling with the Marines, to becoming a lawyer? And I don't say that with disrespect. I don't mean that.
No,
it seems so far apart.
It is. And it's all because of a midlife crisis. I'm one of seven where everybody in the family is smart, has college degrees, you know, all that stuff. And we're all very competitive in that regard as well. Ooh. And I never felt like I measured up to my siblings, particularly my older brothers.
So let me ask you, where do you fit in that lineup?
Okay, so depending on who you ask, I'm either the first girl or the fifth boy.
Explain that one to me.
So I have four older brothers, and I was very much, I am the fifth child, the fifth of seven. So I was very much into boy things when I was growing up, because that was the only example that I had. Most of the people in my family are either engineers or scientists. And nobody is in the medical profession, which is what kind of the whole finishing nursing school. And there was always that in the back of my mind. Well, nobody else in the family has done this, so I'm going to do this. Or I'm going to finish it anyways. And it kind of grew up with me. None of my siblings are lawyers either. And my grandfather, who I never met, he passed away when I was like 6 months old. It's my dad's dad. He was a very established lawyer with the Justice Department, an attorney with the Justice Department. And my father used to talk about him and beam with pride. And see, now I'm going to get emotional. Getting back to the midlife crisis, when I was about 35 years old, I knew that in order to keep getting promoted in the Navy, I needed to get a graduate degree of some sort. And I knew deep down a graduate degree in nursing was not going to make me happy. It wasn't going to fulfill me. Cause I didn't want to be a practitioner for the rest of my life. And I didn't want to go into education. And those are basically the two avenues. So I thought, you know, I've always thought in the back of my mind that, you know, this law thing is very intriguing. And I thought, you know, why not?
Did you go into the kind of law you wanted to go into?
Yes and no. So when I was in law school, my initial thought was I need to just get away from medicine. I don't want really anything to do with medicine. I'm done with medicine. So I thought, well, employment law would be kind of interesting. And then as I'm going through school and things are getting, you know, the first year. So the saying in law school is the first year they scare you to death. The second year they work you to death. And the third year they bore you to death. I never was scared. It was a little overwhelming at first. I liked the hard work, but I never got bored. You know, even in my third year, I thought I was doing really cool things. But anyways, so by the time I was well into my second year, I thought, you know, this whole law thing is going to take a lot of work just to be good at it once I graduate. I don't want to have to learn the law plus some other field of study in order to be successful. I know medicine. I know how the medical system works. I know how to interpret medical things. I know all that. So in my third year, I did the health law concentration, which was, it was mostly health policy, but it was a good opportunity for me to learn about like health systems and from a legal perspective. So, my first job when I got out of law school was with a defense firm that defended hospitals, physicians, nurses, healthcare providers, which was a great fit because I already knew the medicine. I didn't have to learn that. All I had to learn was how to work the law. And it put me kind of at a great advantage for other people coming in at the same time that I was, because they not only had to learn the legal part, they had to learn the medicine.
Right.
And I became kind of the resident expert. So that was really beneficial.
Well, and I know when we met, we talked a little bit about my experience as an operator who was subpoenaed and the attorney that was bringing suit was very well known. She took down a big, huge corporate medical organization. So it was very intimidating. It was very scary. And the lawyer who was hired by the insurance company to represent all of the people that were being named in the lawsuit, not necessarily people, but companies, was a nurse. And It was, I will tell you again, I was very, very much intimidated because we were so far removed from the incident that happened. I could not understand how I was there, why I was there, why our organization was involved. And we talked about that, but I was so grateful to have her by my side. I was subpoenaed and answered question on video, and it really was nerve-wracking. It really... Because when you have to testify and you've done nothing wrong, you know, it's just a scary thing. So I was very grateful for the nurse lawyer who sat by my side and advised me. And I will say sort of comforted me after, before and after having to, having done that. So yeah, you really brought a unique set of skills to your second career.
Well, and one of the things that gave me really, it made me feel really good about what I was doing was, most of the witnesses that I would defend in depositions or that were witnesses at trial were nurses or CNAs. And them knowing that I was a nurse gave them great comfort, and they would, you know, and I tell them, the first thing I tell them is I need you to tell me truthfully what happened, because I can defend bad facts, but I can't defend lies. So you, even if you think it's a terrible thing that happened, you need to be truthful with me. Nobody's saying that you individually did anything wrong. It's, you know, it's the company that's being sued, but you need to, and they did, they were honest with me. And my law partner at the time could go into that same room and that same group, same nurse, and say that he's the defender in this case, and he's just a lawyer, and she probably wouldn't have been truthful with him, because there's a trust factor that was built in when I would go in and talk to witnesses, and I really liked that because they trusted me, and it, and I would tell people I defend nurses, they're my people. And I used to be accused from horrible plaintiff's attorneys that I drank the Kool-Aid, and, you know, I think, you know, all nurses can do no wrong.
Wait, what does that mean?
And I'm like, no, it's, I've been in their shoes. I know what they've been through, and I know how to talk to them, and I know how to defend them. And so it just really, it was the only thing about litigation that I enjoyed. There's a cultural factor that goes into it as well, because a lot of the nurses that I worked with were nurses that were not, you know, that English wasn't their first language, or, you know, or culturally different, and they get very intimidated and very, they have a natural respect for people that they think have authority over them, whether it's deserved or not. And that can be very difficult. And I, you know, and so it was a matter of letting them know, you know, I've been in your shoes. I know what this means. I know what this is like, and I will do everything I can to make sure that you get through it, without too much trauma.
If you could say anything to your younger self, what would that be?
I've actually had this question before, and it always stirs up emotion. But so when I was in junior high, I got bullied a lot. And so I would go back and tell my younger self that it's going to be okay. You're going to rise above this. You're going to be better than these idiots that are causing you problems now. And you're going to go to heights you never thought you could get to. And just, you know, hang in there. It's all going to be okay.
I always say there's a place where I want to rewind and play that again. And I think that's so important, because we talk about in this podcast, I talk to people about times that felt like disasters or just felt like the end of the world or so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. The reassurance is you do get through it. My heart breaks for Mary in junior high who got bullied. Those experiences stay with you. Mm-hmm. And continue to be emotional as you get older.
Yeah, it never goes away. You know, you feel like you're past it. And I just, you know, I look at my life since then, and, you know, and I made a conscious decision when I was a freshman in college, that I wasn't, screw people if they didn't like me. You know, I wasn't going to try so hard to, you know, get people to like me. I was just going to be me. And which actually turns out to be more likable than the me I was trying to be. but I just, once I made that decision to just kind of live my life and do the things that I knew were important in my life, that the rest would kind of fall into place. And it absolutely did. And, you know, those 2 years or 3 years from sixth grade to, through eighth grade, or sixth and seventh mostly, were horrible. But yeah. I think having gone through that and having made the decision that I made a few years later to just move through my life on my terms, made me a stronger person.
Not that anybody should have to go through being bullied, because it is horrible and it hurts.
It's horrible. Yeah. And I think luckily for me and our age group is we didn't have social media. We didn't have all of the opportunities to be bullied that they have now. And my heart breaks for these kids that have to experience this literally 24/7. I could, I could get away from it when I was home with my family. But now I don't know how it shouldn't be happening. And I don't know how to help young kids who are having to deal with it, other than to say, this will get better. Your life will be okay. You will get through this, and they have to believe that.
Well, and the other thing to people who maybe aren't bullied and are not bullies, that kindness matters. Mm-hmm. It matters when you reach out to that person that you can see being bullied, and that takes some courage.
Yeah. And I had I had that very incident where one of our classmates witnessed what these girls were doing to me and came over and said, let's walk home together. And she walked me as far as she lived. And then I had to go the rest of the way by myself. And so for that, half mile, I was safe because I was with her. Now these girls knew where I'd be, coming out the other end and were waiting for me. But at least for that period of time, I was safe. And I'll always remember that, because it was an act of kindness and bravery on her part to do that.
And isn't that amazing that how many years later that you still remember that kindness? Yeah. It doesn't have to be this big grand gesture, just something small for somebody that you might see suffering can make such a difference.
And I wish I could remember that person's name, that girl's name. I don't even think I really knew her at the time. She just was, it was an act of kindness because she was witnessing something terrible happening. But and there's so many times I think, if I could remember her name or ever knew her name or ever run into her again, I would thank her, because I think it was a pivotal point for me, because I realized there are people out there who will intervene.
That's right.
When things like that are happening.
That's right. Well, and if she's listening, or if somebody who's done something like that is listening, thank you. Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
From those of us who have needed that moment of kindness. Mm-hmm. Kindness really matters.
It does. It does. It matters more than most people know.
Mary, what is the best thing that's happened to you along your journey?
Probably, and this is on a personal level, probably my wife has been the best.
And what's her name?
Happened to me. Barbara.
And,
we just celebrated our 17th anniversary, on the 24th of March.
Happy anniversary. And so,
thank you.
Have you ever been fired from a job before?
I have. I've been fired twice, actually.
Really?
And yes. And, both times, at the time, I thought this is the worst thing that could ever happen to me. The first time it happened, I was devastated. I thought, first of all, I felt like that was unjust, but whatever. And the more I kind of worked through the process of kind of processing that thing, I thought, this was probably ultimately is probably a good thing, because I needed to leave that job. I just didn't know how. there were things in that job that were holding me back, and I didn't have the knowledge or the tools to say, I need to leave this job. So she basically did it for me. And even though I was pissed, I was really, really angry, as I processed through it, I actually ran into this person 3 or 4 years later at a conference, and I walked up to her and I thanked her. I probably would still be there and not enjoying my life. And since then, I have moved on to these other great things. And so the next time that I got fired after that, which was, I don't know, 3 or 4 different jobs later, because I just kind of, I would leave jobs when it was time to just for me to move on to something else.
Yep.
And this one was, they called it a layoff, but it was technically a firing, and it was for stupid, not valid reasons. But the being fired, yes, it's a failure, but sometimes it's an opportunity. And I don't even know if calling it a failure is accurate, but it's a personal hurt.
It feels like you're being trampled on.
Yes. And unjustly too, because, you know, it's especially, I mean, there are people that kind of set themselves up to be fired and that's what they want. That has never been my goal ever. And it is, it's a very personal affront. But in the back of my mind, and when I get there, I know that it's only going to mean something better on the other side.
You know, another thing I talk about is what I call personal propellants, that there are things in life that feel like total disasters in the moment, at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's not until later that we find the blessing, or we find that happened for a reason. Those some things that I felt were disasters at one time were the things that propelled me in the moment. It is hard. It's hard to accept. It hurts.
And it pushes you forward even when you didn't know you needed to be pushed forward.
So getting fired isn't the end of the world.
It is not the end of the world. And I can honestly say from personal experience, it means there's something better on the other side. I cherish the friendships that I have. And I think I'm very lucky because I have more than a handful of people that I can call good friends. And that I think is special. So I think that the best thing that's happened to me is just having the opportunity to make so many really great friends and knowing that they're there regardless of how far apart we are, and how little time we get to spend together these days. But I mean, my two closest friends are two of my friends from nursing school. And we see each other like maybe once every 10 years, and we always just pick up where we left off. And it's just amazing.
Do you have a go-to mantra?
I have a couple of them, actually.
I'd love to hear them.
And they're both from my dad. And the first one is that always look out for the little guy. Like if you see something happening, or if there's somebody that needs help and they don't have a voice, you help them. And if there's anything you can do to further their life or make it better in any way, you help them. And that's not hard to do. It can be little things.
Yes.
But anything that you do that can make somebody else's life better, don't ever let anybody tell you can't do something because you're a girl. Now, he didn't always live by it, but he would say it.
But he wanted his little girl to know she could do anything. She wanted
exactly.
to do. And
exactly.
Mary, it looks like you have. What's next for you?
Well, I failed at retirement. I'm not exactly sure why. I think it was I've always worked from when I was in college on. And other than sports, I don't have a lot of hobbies. And so trying to just kind of figure that out in terms of what am I going to do to fill my day? It was taking too long, and I thought I gotta keep my brain engaged. And I really do love what I do. So it doesn't really feel like work.
If somebody out there is listening now and they desperately want to make a change, but feel stuck, what advice would you give them?
Listen to your gut. And don't be afraid to take that chance. You know, sometimes we have to take a leap of faith. And if there's something just in the back of your mind that you think, you know, that might be interesting, or I might like that. Don't be afraid to do it, because even if it doesn't work out, at least you know you tried. And, you know, one of the things when I was deciding on this whole law school thing is I kept telling myself, I don't want to be 90 years old sitting on my front porch in a rocker saying, I wish I had tried that. I wonder if I would have been any good at that. And so it's, you never know, because literally at the time that I was thinking about it, I thought, I'm not smart enough to get into law school, let alone, you know, succeed. Because we all have that self-doubt. And so even if there's something that you think you can't do, or you think you're not smart enough to do, or you don't have the time to do, just try it. Just because at worst you say, you know what, that didn't work, but at least you'll know, and you tried it, and you won't have any regrets about not trying it.
That goes back to what you said earlier, right? Where you said, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Why not? There's the only thing that's holding me back is a fear of failure. Well, if we don't take that leap of faith because we're afraid of failing, then that means we're afraid of succeeding, because we're losing that same opportunity. You know, you have just as much, you know, it's a 50-50 thing. You have just as much opportunity to be successful as you do of failing. So don't be afraid of the failing. Look at the successful part.
Mary, thank you for joining me today. I knew this would be a fantastic conversation, and it has been. Thank you so much.
Oh, I just want to thank you, Chrissy, for giving me the opportunity. I just really enjoyed this, and it's been great kind of having this conversation with you. I really enjoyed it. So thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure.